The conference committee, Senate File 86, will come to order. This is the automated license plate reader bill. We have a proposed language for the conference committee to consider. That is in members' folders. It is the A40 amendment. We will indicate that prior to coming together here this evening, Chair Cornish and I had an opportunity to sit down with staff and work through the House and the Senate versions of the bill. Between the two of us, we reached an agreement and conveyed that to our conference committees as a recommendation for the conference committee to accept. This hearing will give us an opportunity to convey the details to the public, to take testimony in connection with it, and to act as the conference committee will choose to act. I'm going to say, first of all, that you know this is an issue that's been around for several years, has had many hearings. I can speak, I know, for the Senate that we've had several hearings this year alone with many hours of testimony. And so it's, I guess, a short way of saying it has been thoroughly vetted publicly already. That's not to say that we aren't going to welcome testimony here tonight, but given that we have limited time available, including the conference committee that's going to convene in this room shortly after this conference committee is done, we're going to limit the public testimony to a total of 30 minutes on these provisions, and then we'll have time for the conference committee to consider what to do. So with that said, I'm going to ask Senate counsel to review the provisions that are proposed in the A40 amendment. Ms. Pontius.
Mr. Chairman and members, on the A40, Section 1 is a House-only provision that amends the rest data statute, and this is data under current law that are public. And basically, it adds the use of an automated license plate reader in enforcement arrest to make it used to public data. And then Section 2 is also a House-only provision, which specifies that the existence of all technology, surveillance technology maintained by a law enforcement agency, is public data. And then Section 3 is the main section that actually deals with the standards and procedures and classification of the data. It follows the House model in terms of the structure and actually makes it a separate section of law as opposed to a number of run-on paragraphs in a subdivision of the law enforcement data statute. So that's just a stylistic difference where it follows the House model. Under Subdivision 1, the definition of an automated license plate reader follows basically the Senate definition, which was a little more detailed. And the Senate language also included two references to collecting data on the vehicles as well as license plate numbers. And then under Subdivision 2, which basically deals with the collection and classification and restrictions on use of the ALPR data, the laundry list of the data types, if you look starting in line 2.15, is the same in both bills. The House specifically limits the collection of reader data to these items. The Senate doesn't actually restrict the use, although it classifies all those items as private or non-public. So this basically follows the House structure in that respect. The underlying classifications were identical in both bills. Where you see it, probably another difference to look at would be starting on page 2, line 22. And this is House language that restricts the use of the readers in terms of the databases that it can be matched with. And it can only be matched against the Minnesota license plate data file. But additional data sources can be used if the data relate to an active criminal investigation. There's also an explicit prohibition on the creation of any kind of a central state repository. And then also the paragraph D starting on page 2.27 is House-only language that specifies that the readers cannot be used to monitor or track an individual who's the subject of an active criminal investigation without a warrant unless there's some exigent circumstances that justify the use without obtaining a warrant. Then subdivision 3 governs the destruction of the data. And if you look on page 2, line 33, the House required destruction 30 days from the data collection. The Senate was 90 days, and this proposal would be 60 days from the date of collection. It's no later than 60 days. And the rest of that, the paragraph B starting the bottom of page 2, top of page 3 was pretty much identical in both bills, just some stylistic differences. And then if you get down to page 3, line 9, the House specifically states that, this is House only language, that specifically states that if the data become inactive criminal investigative data, then the general data destruction rules that apply to that type of data would apply. And then subdivision 4 is the sharing among law enforcement agencies. Again, there weren't too many substantive differences in the language in the two bills. If you look at page 3, the line 18, there's a paragraph that's from the House, which states that the reader data that's not related to an active criminal investigation can't be shared, traded, sold, etc., unless explicitly authorized. That language was not in the Senate bill. Subdivision 5, the log, again, was fairly similar in both bills. There is language from the Senate file that's included on page 3, line 26, that requires the log to include a list of all databases with which data were compared, unless the existence of the database itself is not public. You also have the requirement earlier that the general rules that it can only be used against the Minnesota Lake file, unless it relates to an active investigation. And if that were to take place and they were to look at other databases, then that would have to be included in the log. And then on the bottom of page 3, that last line there, the list that has to be maintained by law enforcement, and the Senate bill did not actually require a list to be maintained by the local law enforcement agencies. It was just maintained at the BCA level. So that is just a parallel requirement from the House file here. It does also include a reference on page 3, line 36, to other surveillance devices that have automated license plate reader capability. This is kind of a theme in a few other places in the Senate bill, because some of these things like street cameras can be reprogrammed to also perform an ALPR function. And then subdivision 6, one other thing too, if you look on the top of page 4, the whole issue of the location of the device not being public if it's security information, there is House language here, which also appears later, that the agency can make a determination that the location is security information, but it would be subject to in-camera judicial review under a general provision in the Data Practices Act. So that's different in the House language. And then subdivision 6 is the audit language. The House required an annual audit. The Senate required a triennial audit. And this is a biennial audit. And otherwise, a lot of the language is fairly similar. There is a new provision, though, beginning on page 4, line 11, where if the Commission of Administration believes that a law enforcement agency is not compliant with this section or their applicable law, then the Commissioner can order additional independent audits. And that was language that was not in either bill. It's kind of part of going from 1 year to 3 years to two, so there could still be more frequent ones required. And then if you look at, starting on page 4, line 15, this is basically a rewrite of House language in cases where there's a pattern of substantial noncompliance by a law enforcement agency. And the main substantive difference is that under the House language, if there was an order of suspension, that the use could only be reinstated by law enacted by the legislature. And under this language, it could be reinstated by the Commissioner of Administration. And then the paragraph C, starting page 4, line 23, the report on the audits, with the summarizing the results of audits, that's house-only language. And then the subdivision 7 authorization to access to data, a lot of the language of both bills was similar. There's a couple of things that follow more the Senate model here. There's a reference in House to the inquiries being on a case-by-case basis, and that language is not here. If you go down to page 4, line 36, it uses the Senate standard that a request for access has to be based on a reasonable suspicion that the data are pertinent to an investigation. The House language just was that the data be pertinent to an investigation. And then on paragraph C, starting in 5.4, the language was similar in both bills. There are a few things picked up from the House language that weren't in the Senate, in particular on page 4, on page 5, line 5, the reference to role-based access. And then on lines 8 and 9, the data audit trail requirement is from the House. And then subdivision 8, the notice to the BCA. Again, both bills are fairly similar here. You have another reference starting page 5, line 12, to the having to notify them within 10 days if there's been integration of automated license plate reader technology into another surveillance device. And that similar concept is picked up in the list requirements down below. And then also at the very end on page 5, line 22, it's the same security information issue discussed earlier where it would be an in-camera judicial review. And then the effective date is August 1, 2015, which was the House effective date. The Senate had an immediate effective date. And then section 4, the reader policy, the main difference here is that the model policy required under the Senate bill, the statewide one that the Post Board would develop, is not included, and it would just be the local law enforcement agencies establishing policies. And that would be effective August 1, which was in both bills, but they would have to actually adopt a policy no later than January 2015.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Pines. Before we take public testimony, are there any questions from members of the conference committee to clarify the content of this proposal? Yes, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it your intention of the conference committee that we just have to do an up or down vote on this particular language, or are you going to be entertaining possible tweaks to the language or amendments?
It's within the purview of the conference committee members to offer amendments to the proposal. So,
thank you.
We'll consider those.
Do we ask those now? If we have questions, do we ask that of staff and you now, or do we wait till after the testimony?
Well, what's
your plan?
I would recommend if you have questions about the meaning or the content of the proposal to ask them now, and then we'll take public testimony.
I do have a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Of course. Sure. Representative Scott.
On page 2, line 10, the definition of LPR, do you have in there for investigative purposes, law enforcement databases for investigative purposes, what other purposes would law enforcement or would you think that it would be used for, or that you would want to use it for, would be my question on that.
It doesn't really matter, I guess, under the definition what else it might be used for. It's only been authorized for use for investigative purposes in this proposal. I'm not sure what else they might want to use it for, but it doesn't really matter. It would not be authorized by law for use for any purposes other than investigative purposes.
Okay. My next question is on 3.27. I'm just wondering, this is talking about the use of a log, and talks about the aggregate number of vehicles and license plates on which data are collected for each period of active use, and a list of all the state and federal databases that they were compared to, unless the existence of the database is not public. Do we have some databases that they would be using or are currently using that are not public? Or is that something that could maybe be stricken after the word compared?
This came up when the Senate Transportation Committee was an amendment that was made there by Senator Peterson, Brandon Peterson, and I don't know that there was any specific list that was provided, but I guess there would be a conflict between provisions if there were certain databases that were not public yet were required to be disclosed as a part of this. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think the question there is, I think this bill, and I'd have to, look completely, through with a fine tooth comb, but I thought the whole idea was to keep this information public and to limit the number of, limit the uses of which databases can be used so that the public knows what databases are being used. And if you've got one that supposedly is not public that's being used, I don't know. I think we could live without the last part of that sentence, unless law enforcement has a good reason to keep it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shum.
And Representative Scott, I guess the only thing that comes to mind is either the future and or an active investigation that information may be sent to related to, we may have groups or law enforcement that's working on terror investigations that they are not public. The active investigations may be in a database that are not public databases and not publicly available to view. They may be at a later time once the investigation is done, and potentially they could be moved to another database where the information is then public. I mean, if you wanted to look at it at that realm, but I think that's actually not the worst piece of the legislation. It's probably wise. Because long-term, even if we didn't have it today, that may exist 30, 40 years from now, and it may open us up to something that would be problematic if we didn't have that provision there. It seems to make sense the way it's worded. We already have the ability to have a piece of a database, or however you want to look at it, data sets that are not public and not allowed to be viewed in any way, shape, or form, because they're part of an active investigation. And if that, Senator Peterson's not here, but it kind of seems that the way I read it, that's kind of the direction it's going. Well, I mean, what is it, because I'd ask you questions even back further on your, what is it that you think is going to happen, or even on that other one?
Well,
Representative Scott.
And I mean that with all due respect, I'm just curious.
Well, I think, I guess in these specific instances, I've deferred the House language. I felt like it was the rails were a little tighter on it. But I think this is probably an issue, too, that we might want to hear from some testimony. There may be some folks in the audience that want to talk about it a little bit, but either one of them I just think are too loose.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shum.
One final thing. I guess then on that note, though, is if we decided as a whole, as a legislature, that there would be no database or anything that would ever be allowed to exist and not be public, then that's a different case. I mean, we could decide that at another time. If we do have that, or it would be within the law to have that, then that makes sense to have that within this statute. Or maybe you're right, maybe we don't even need that in there, because if we're allowed to have that, we don't need that language in there either. It doesn't seem to be bad or good.
Representative Cornish.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, but if we had a database of active investigations or certain kind of security information or something, if the database was all made up of just that, then I suppose it would be not public, and that would be one of those databases that would fit that definition. So I don't know if we should jettison that or not.
Any other questions to clarify the content of the A40 amendment that's presented here? All right, with that, we will welcome public testimony. Do we get to pick this first? Anyone in the back of the room want to come up and testify first, too? All right, it's 11:20. We'll conclude the public testimony no later than 11:50. Mr. Neumeister, welcome to the conference committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, for the record, my name is Richard Neumeister. I'm a citizen who's done a large amount of work on this particular issue. 4.5 years ago, this was made public in terms of some of the things that law enforcement was doing. It's been a thing that I've been investigating a lot, using a lot of data practices, talking to a lot of people across the country, to where then it became an article in the newspaper, and then has led to where we are at today. Three things by my comments on the A40 amendment will be guided by the three following points. License plate readers, their systems, and use set up a tool of mass surveillance of the public, which is constantly changing with technology. Number two, there is a collection by government of millions of bits of personal data on innocent and law-abiding people of this system. Third, keeping LPR data on innocent and law-abiding people presumes that they are under investigation, that everything and turns the presumption of innocence on its head. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee, or co-chairs, these are in the vein of my comments in terms of the 840 amendment. In terms of the definition on lines on page 2, lines 2, 6 through 212, I encourage you to take the House definition. One of the things that's very much happening along with license plate readers and its technology is it's changing and evolving. And to where to capture, which I think the House definition does, is to whatever is going to be considered an LPR, that you get data derived from that. Secondly, I'll give you an example in terms of the language here of the Senate. And I'll give you an example of the what they call ALPRs or ALPRs. These are cameras that are not matched with the database, but are just recording license plates. Just license plates. And law enforcement is beginning to do that across the country. And so I see even that type of collection would not be covered under here with the definition, with the definition that says that is capable of recording data or taking a photograph of, and photographs to existing law enforcement databases for investigative purposes. Law enforcement across the country is collecting identifiable license plate numbers on individual vehicles. Beginning to. Some of the big cities are now starting to use cameras, which the co-chair, Chair Latz, gotta make sure I do it the Senate way. I forget some, that the technology is changing and a lot of the APR software is now becoming on cameras without necessarily doing the database matching. So I very much encourage, I think the definition is forward-looking for the technology. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, line 33, of course, I prefer the Senate language of 30 days. As it was after the decision...
Master, you mean the House language of 30 days?
Of 30 days. With the decision made by a body that there was going to be some type of retention. This has been my experience, and in terms of my studies across the country, the less days that government holds on to this kind of information, the less opportunity for mischief
and other kinds of things from my point of view. I always believed less collection of data on innocent law-abiding people is better than keeping it longer. So I prefer option two, I would prefer 30 days, and there's no, everyone knows, pretty much everyone knows I would prefer zero, but that is not the case at this point. Mr. Chairman, on the other point, this would be on page 3.27. In terms of the database language and the language that you were discussing on the second question, this was an amendment done by Tory Westrum in the Transportation Committee. Tory basically said, hey, you know, we want to make sure that the databases in general that you're comparing, so we're talking about data sets, we're talking about, like, some states now are starting to use databases of child support, who are delinquent on their child support, who are delinquent on other kinds of, it's other than just, you know, warrants and all that, which, and basically the hot list is for warrants. And also at the same time, you know, it varies from state to state, but here is whatever database, and all you're saying is the data set. Yes, we do it against terrorists, we do it against this, we do it against that. The public has a right to know. There are no secret files in Minnesota, that's been the key points in 74. And in terms of what kind of databases you have in general. And then all this sentence is saying is, unless the existence of the database itself is not public. So all you're looking for is, what are the state and federal databases that you're comparing to? It's not saying, you know, in the files that are in the database. So if it's ABC database, you know, I'm not aware of anywhere we're saying the database in general, what we're going to use to match your license plate to, is secret. The public has a right to know that. And so I would like to suggest that you just take that language away, online, away, word compare, and take that language that was added. And then as you may remember, Mr. Chairman, then you heard that, and then you asked someone, I know, I don't believe you're a member of the Transportation Committee, and I think someone may have made that to you or done an oral or something in that regards. The fourth point, Mr. Chairman, this would be on line 432. I believe that in case by case something is important. I think that it's important that if requests are going to be made of data on innocent law-abiding people, that it not be done in broad kind of ways. And so to make sure that the intent, which I think the House was trying to do, is case by case, on line 4, page 32, after the comma, or after the word F, put comma, each request is. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my comments. I know the hour is late, but what I've shared with you, Mr. Chairman, is
are there any questions?
I want to finish because you were talking.
I'm sorry.
Because you're very influential, both chairs, on these matters. And
we are considering some of your comments, okay. Mr. Neumeister.
So, Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much. Both sides, you know, have adopted some of the things that I and others have done. But as you know, laws are made by those who show up and stay late, and I've learned that from a mentor of maybe of yours, Jack Davies, who some people know, and I still continue to persist until session is done or decision is made. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to answer any questions. Is that all ready? If not, I wish to thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Are there any questions for Mr. Neumeister from members of the conference committee? All right, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify?
I should have even taken a whole half
hour. Thank you. All right. Not seeing anyone else wishing to testify, are there any comments, questions, proposals from members of the conference committee? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would like to propose, a verbal amendment at this point. Amending line 2.10 after the word databases, removing the words for investigative purposes. Then on page 3, after on page 3.27 after the word prepared, delete the remaining part of that sentence. And then on 4.32.
I'm sorry, would you?
That was on.
Representative Scott, why don't I recommend, if you would accept this, that it seems that they are separate questions or issues relating to the content of the bill. So might it be okay if we take them individually one at a time? And then once we deal with the first proposed amendment, we can sure. Go on to your next one.
I guess I think maybe the preferable thing to do on the first one is just to substitute the House language for the definition rather than the Senate language. So I would move that.
Do the members of the committee have the original House language?
It's on page R2, if people have.
Representative Scott?
Thank you. Page R2.
I haven't, but Senator Kent.
Senator Kent, do you have the language now? Okay, so members, I'd like to point out at least one or two things. First of all, the House language referred to an automated license plate reader as government data rather than as an electronic device. So there's a basic flaw, if you will, in the definition there, since the electronic device is not itself data. So if this amendment were adopted, there would have to be some redrafting of the House definition, no matter how you approach it. The Senate language did add additional detail to the definition of the electronic device, referring to capturing of information, if you will, of motor vehicle license plate numbers, as well as specifying the capable of recording data on or taking a photograph of, and went on to add detail relating to comparing the collected data and photographs to existing law enforcement databases. So at least for my money, there's a lot more clarity and specificity and guardrails around the definition in the Senate language than is in the House language. So I prefer the Senate language in that regard. Any comments, anyone else wish to comment with regard to Representative Scott's motion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Hall. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a good reason on 2.10 for leaving that investigative purposes in? What are we seeing?
Representative Cornish.
Well, I think the reason to leave it in, Mr. Chair, on 2.10 for investigative purposes, it actually narrows the use for better protection because it says for investigative purposes than the other language. So that's why I thought you would leave it in.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative.
So then the way I'm understanding that, I mean, the investigative purposes makes it so that a city or couldn't utilize law enforcement to perform some other duties that an LPR could track or obtain data for building code purposes or anything else by saying it's strictly for investigative purposes. So it seems like that's actually keeping it in the purview of law enforcement rather than maybe some other function that you may or may not want them to do at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Scott.
House research was just whispering in my ear to further explain the definition, so I'm wondering if Mr. Gehring could weigh in on this.
Sure. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to sort of clarify the way this definition operates because it's been mentioned a couple of times. So the definition is just establishing a definition of the use of the term automated license plate reader for purposes of this section. It doesn't actually contain any substantive restrictions on their use otherwise. So for example, the inclusion of for investigative purposes on 2.10, I think, wouldn't be read to limit license plate readers to only that purpose because this is just the definition of the term that we use to classify the data and create the other restrictions.
So, Mr. Gehring, it sounds like you're saying that this applies to the scope of the section, the regulation of license plate readers, which is to say that all of the stuff that's in this bill would not apply to use of license plate readers that are used for other purposes, non-investigative purposes, whatever those might be.
Mr. Chair, and I maybe would confer with Ms. Pontius, but I think you could read it that way.
Ms. Pontius.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's how I would read it. It was originally the bill, I mean, that's why it was in the law enforcement data statute, and the intent was to regulate the use by law enforcement for law enforcement purposes. In the real world, that's probably 99.9% of the use. I don't know how else they're used.
I couldn't imagine if there was a different use that was if it was being used for a different purpose, we might have a different set of regulations, restrictions, authorizations, controls, oversight, all of that would might not necessarily apply to law enforcement circumstances. So I guess if we were to change this provision and delete for investigative purposes, if there is some other use for it, the rest of this bill might not really fit it too well. Just a thought. Is there any other comment or discussion relating to Representative Scott's proposed amendment on line 2.10? Then we will take a vote. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Scott, you have another amendment to propose?
I do. On line 2.33, I'd like to change that back to the House language of 30 days. And the reason being, you know, when I was originally at zero on this, because I believe that keeping any kind of personal private data on individuals by law enforcement or by a government entity on innocent people is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And there are many people that believe the same way I do. In fact, some survey results here, some polling results I'll pass out. And they talk about, one survey here is from Public Policy Polling, a reputable polling firm.
We'll have our staff please distribute these to the members of the conference committee.
And under the question on the right-hand side, I copied the first page of this poll. The question is regarding government authority to store location data. And if you see, there's 79% of the respondents, is a poll of 500 Minnesota voters. Government should not be able to store data about your location and travel without probable cause. The second piece of paper is a KSTP poll that is more specific to license plate readers. And again, the majority of the people there do not think that it's a good idea for law enforcement to keep this information. That said, during the committee process, in order to move an LPR bill forward this year, agreed to talk to law enforcement. We met on two different occasions. We came down, they came down to our offices. We met with privacy advocates and law enforcement and my staff and Mr. Gehring. And we reached what I thought was the consensus on this. And we agreed to 30 days. I believe that if a deal is struck in the legislature, that's what we should do, is hold to that deal. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to hold to the deal that was originally made, that I really, talked to and bargained with these folks in good faith, and only to have it sent back to the Senate and have this happen when I thought that it would probably be concurred with, because consensus had been reached. So with that, I would ask for support for the 30 days. I'm not in opposition to, after a year or two, if the audits come back in a favorable way, to upping that to 60 days, but I think 30 days is a good starting point. I believe that the privacy advocates have come a long way from saying, we believe this is unconstitutional, to, okay, we'll let them have this data for 30 days.
With that,
I would ask you.
Representative Scott, if I may ask you a question, did the deal that you say you made include the Senate?
No, did not.
Representative Cornish.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and then Representative Scott, I was in those deals, and I didn't think in any way, shape, or form that 30 days was going to make it all the way, or was it expected to. And in fact, I don't know if I've ever expected that in any kind of a deal that I've made in the House. Is usually get it to the committee or to the floor. And when we passed it off the floor, in fact, the pitch I made to the caucus and the pitch I made in the floor said that I would do my best to stay as low as we go. Everybody knew the Senate was at 90, and then I was at 30. We were at 30. And it started out at 180. And so when we met in the middle, I basically do what a lot of conference committees do, is meet in the middle. I had never thought from your office to the committee to the floor that I would have much luck at 30, and that's why I never promised 30 to anybody.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Cornish, you were sitting there the first day, and I believe one of the representatives from law enforcement was there. You weren't there the second day that we sat down. You were out of town. And I frankly wouldn't have agreed to move forward at all from zero if I didn't think that 30 was the deal. What we were talking about in those meetings was what was agreed upon. And so I feel a little bit like perhaps I wasn't bargained with in good faith, and I'm sorry that you think that this was only for committee purposes and to get it to the floor. That was not my intention at all. I would have never sat down with law enforcement to make a deal, because I was serious about the 30 days. I felt that I still do believe that that is an adequate period of time, especially until we find out through these audits what if law enforcement is treating the data correctly, if they're accessing it correctly. I toyed with ideas of putting language in here that if someone doesn't access and go through the channels here correctly, that they would immediately lose their job. And I didn't put that in here. I thought that we bargained in good faith, and the language that we had agreed upon was good to go. So again, with that, I would ask for a favorable vote on 38.
Representative Shum.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Scott, I mean, I have a great amount of respect for you, and I know that this is very a passionate issue for you, and you've put a lot of work into this, and we've spent a lot of time on this. I mean, a lot of time. But, you know, a perfect example of how things come from the Senate or to the House and why we have conference committee, let's look at what we did today related to chemicals, fire retardant chemicals related to firefighters today. The Senate passed that bill with all those chemicals in place with only two GOP votes against it, but we couldn't even get that bill to the floor under GOP leadership to protect firefighters without the Chamber of Commerce getting it down to maybe four chemicals. And that wasn't what I wanted, but I supported the bill because I thought it was it's a step forward. And now in this bill specifically, I mean, I even said this in committee when you were working with Representative Lucero in Representative Cornish's committee, that, you know, I'm not going to support your amendments in either direction because I know that this is the bill that we're going to be able to at least move to conference committee, and that's where I'm at. Now, I'm absolutely in agreement that I'm glad that you can bring this amendment forward to change that. I won't disrupt the deal that we can get this back to the floor in either body today. And in fact, I'm not in disagreement. Now, the only thing I would say about your position on saying come back in the future, I mean, I'd maybe look at someday where we start off at one point, and if there's no problem, or in the penalty phase, or if there's a penalty, to say, well, if you have problems, then we're going to decrease your days, or if you're okay, then we can increase your days. I can see something like that, but I don't want to disrupt the whole bill either way. I appreciate that Senator Latz and the Senate is willing to come closer to the House position. Not that I'm in agreement with the House position, but I do appreciate that that's what we brought forward, and you're willing to do that. So,
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Shum's point, you know, I am disappointed that we're coming down from 90 days because I think there's plenty of history that shows that that window has been important in terms of solving crimes and making a difference and keeping people safe. In reference to the handout, I think you said it was a KSTP poll, Representative Scott. I think it's interesting the way the question is phrased. How important is it to you to protect privacy when police use these technologies? And my quick math is 71% said very to somewhat important. And what I would submit is I think that at 60 days or 90 days, when you combine this with the very strict limitations, and this is what I think is so important about this bill, in terms of the logging, the limitations on sharing among different law enforcement agencies, the audit, and I think most critically, the authorization even to access the data in the first place. I think we are protecting people's privacy here within the realm of doing good investigation and public safety. So, you know, in that spirit, I'm willing to make this compromise because I think we're doing what we need to do to protect people's privacy.
Any other comments from members of the conference committee in connection with Representative Scott's motion? All right, then we'll vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Are there any other proposed amendments from members of the conference committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Let's see if I'll get this little nugget. On 4.32, at the end of the sentence, after the word if, add each request is. And this is getting to, I think, what we all agree this language is getting at. It probably just is some comfort language that says that law enforcement personnel, a person can't blanketly have unfettered access to it. Each request that they
if they're investigating, if they want access to the database as they're investigating a crime, that they should have, each request should be authorized in writing. Probably what it's already saying, but I think that's some good comfort language. Since we took out the case-by-case basis, I think it's saying the same thing.
Representative Cornish.
Well, I think it's completely unworkable on any time you have to have a case-by-case sign-off. I mean, you're not always going to be able to find somebody to do that, and sometimes investigative crimes happen real fast, boom, 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 and you can't wait. When I was chief of police, I gave my officers a username and a password, and then they had to check in each time, and it was tracked, and in fact, that's how they caught the people that misused the system last time. And the case-by-case basis, just with active law enforcement, with a lot of things going on in a metro area, to find somebody to give you written access every time is just completely unworkable to me. The way I'm thinking about
it. Mr. Chair. Representative Schoen.
Representative Scott, so could I offer a hypothetical situation, can you tell me if this would fit under that? So I'm the shift supervisor down in Cottage Grove at overnight, and I'm working with a crew, and so we get a kidnapping case or who knows, whatever it may be, one that arises to the level where I, as the shift supervisor, would determine that that would be worthy of going back through the system to say, did we find this particular vehicle registered to Senator Hall in Cottage Grove because we suspect him of some nefarious doing, which is clearly not the case. Because it's hypothetical.
Just for the record.
But, so, am I, the way I would read it, then I would have to get on the phone, which, I mean, I have a cell phone, I guess I could call him right now, but, and see if my boss, Chief Craig Worley, is awake, and ask him if it's okay that I do this, because I mean, and I don't mean that to be silly, because that's the way I read it when you put that in, and not only that, but I would have to go to his house and get it in writing if I did that by each, because I think the way the original language is, it allows the chief to say, Dan, you're the shift supervisor, and so it's going to be okay for shift supervisors to grant that permission, or to go into the system themselves and then have to explain it, because we're doing the audits. Because we have a biannual audit or otherwise within the bill, and so how would you see that affecting that particular scenario?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it says the head of a law enforcement agency or their designee, so I'm assuming that always at a department, there's always somebody that's in charge. Am I right? There's always somebody that's in charge that's present.
Right.
So it says, or designee. So there has to be someone there that could sign off on it.
But, so, Mr. Chair, if you put in each request is, then it's specific to each request. And then it's specific to the chief of police, sheriff, or head of the law enforcement agency, or their designee. But then, I don't know how that makes it more efficient. And controlling it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott, maybe to elaborate on that, what if not every shift supervisor is a designee by the chief law enforcement officer, or what if the shift supervisor is called off out into the community to respond to something and there doesn't happen to be a designee back at the police station at the time the need comes in? In a kidnapping case, for example, every minute will count. If a car has got a child in it and they're heading out of town, 15-minute delay in being able to access the location data might be the difference between catching that car and not catching that car. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, then tell me where in this language it says that somebody just can't blanketly access the information. In those cases, if they don't have to do it in each specific time, then it's, where is the language that says that the person, you know, if the shift supervisor's not there, that the person there that decides that they want to access the data, show me where in this language right here that they would be prohibited from doing that.
So Representative Scott, on line 4.35 through 6 going on to the top of page 5, it requires that a request for access must be based on a reasonable suspicion that the data are pertinent to an active criminal investigation and must include a record of the factual basis for the request and any associated case number, complaint, or incident that is the basis for the request. I would also note that failure to comply with these access limitations would be a crime under a law that we passed last year, be a misdemeanor crime for the investigator to improperly access the database.
I guess I'm still going to offer the amendment. I feel like that language needs to be added in there, and so I'm sure it'll go down to
Representative Scott out of Cornish.
Representative Scott, we in my former district, 24B, I had 18 cities in my district that had police departments. Not one of them had more than one person on per night. The town that I was chief of in Lake Crystal, we have one officer on, and there's no. And when they're a full-time officer, they don't have to have supervision. That's only for part-time officers, you have to have supervision. So a full-time officer has got no guarantee a chief or a sergeant lieutenant is going to be anywhere near the area. In fact, there's no law that requires them to have backup or a sergeant or anybody within. And so he would have to go to the sheriff's department, not even under his jurisdiction. So that's why we need the blanket access. So when the sergeant or the chief of police calls the officer in and says, okay, this is going to be your access, and they give him permission in writing. And then if he or she violates the conditions of that access, they're subject to discipline or a crime. So I think we've got it covered.
It's not the best structure.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Shum.
And Mr. Chair, it looks like, you know, starting at line 5.4, it starts to talk about how that is accessed, and then through 5.10, you know, that's all part of the audits as well. That's correct. Correct? Comma, correct?
Representative Shum, I believe you are correct.
So, that seems to, I mean, doesn't that cover it? By including all that information about when and how it's accessed as part of the audits, which also includes the why?
I'm sorry, Representative Sean, did you have a question on there?
That's probably much better, actually. What I'm getting at is from 5.4 to 5.10 seems to be the paragraph that covers the audits, and then would also basically include the why they accessed it, so making the ability to do the audit and whether it was right or wrong even more prominent than just having someone else say, yeah, it's okay.
I would note that at least the first sentence and the third sentence there was specifically House language that was not contained in the Senate file, as I recall. The whole paragraph.
Right.
Council's informed me that that's all House language. Part of the guardrails against unauthorized use of the access.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. What I was trying to do was, because the House language had a case-by-case basis, and it did pass off the House floor with all but two or three yes votes, because we moved the case-by-case basis, I was trying to make a clarification there.
The Senate language that passed off the Senate floor did not have that language, and so We're in conference committee, and
the
recommendation is different than that particular provision. So, Representative Scott's motion is at the end of line 4.32 after the word if to insert each request is. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Council, I had a question relating to some clarification on line 4.36. Where there is some language that says a request for access, which does not appear to be consistent with language earlier in the paragraph that doesn't specify a need to make a request for each, for the more general authorization to access the database. So I'm wondering if it might be grammatically most appropriate to, on line 4.36, delete a request for. And it would be consistent with the requirements of paragraph C, access must be based on. Or we could even say each access. So then each time the database is accessed, it would be based on those prerequisites. You wouldn't have the request. No request involved.
Mr. Chair, could you say each request for access?
Well, my point, Representative Scott, is that there isn't a request each time you access it, and we just defeated your attempt to require a request for each access. So leaving the request in there is inconsistent grammatically with the previous language. So I think we have to delete out the specific requests and just connect it to the each access that is made. Mm-hmm. Probably would have to do the same thing with regard to language on 5.2 and 5.3. So on 5.2 we'd delete request and insert access, and on 5.3 delete request and insert access. I will ask if there's a motion to make those changes. Senator Hall, so moves. Any discussion on that proposed amendment by Senator Hall?
Well, I don't know if he's raising hand or if you want to take
this. Mr. Meister, did you care to comment on that particular motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I just want to make sure what the request is generally for, so that you can know that who are you requesting the data on? So it can be very specific, tied to a person. The request is like specific. How does access change that? Would you be able to find who is requesting the information based on access?
I'm just trying to make sure that there's clarity there.
Mr. Neumeister, as I'm interpreting this language anyway, the request that was mentioned in this paragraph was a request for authorization to access the database. The access itself does not involve a request. Unless you want to call a database inquiry or a database access, if you type in and you push enter and then electronic information goes off and gets run, if you want to consider that a request. But I'm not sure that's the way request was intended to be used in this paragraph.
For me, as you know, the basis of all this was to make sure that if Officer Neumeister, another police officer, is using this to get access, will it be able to know that Rich or someone identifiable? And also to identifiable with the access to it, so you can always go back. That's fine.
Yes, Mr. Neumeister, I understand that, and I think that's covered in the audit trail.
Yeah.
That's maintained.
Thank you, Mr.
In the role-based access. All on paragraph C, lines 5.4 through 10. Any further discussion on Senator Hall's proposed amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Are there any other further amendments proposed? Is there any further discussion with regard to the A40 amendment? Then I think the appropriate motion would be to adopt the A40 amendment as a conference committee report. That, Council, would that be the right amendment, the right motion?
That's amended.
To adopt the A40 amendment as amended as and for the conference committee report. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Senator Hall makes that motion. Is there any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The motion, the amendment was adopted as a conference committee report. Any sort of procedural motions that we need to make, or do you simply direct the staff to prepare the formal conference committee report? And the advisor is here. We can, she can handle it right here for us, right? And then, members, the conference committee report will be prepared and will be circulated for signature. I think there'll be no further business to come before this conference committee. Thank you for all your work on this issue. We are adjourned.